Hey, everybody. This is Chris in Syracuse with all your college basketball updates with Dave in the City on Locks of the Week Radio.
Coast to coast, internet sports talk, Locks of the Week.
Doc Rivers continues to time and time again not get it when it comes to getting... Let him play!
And it comes time, we know how Lincoln dies, you know, a tough spot with a bullet.
And as I speak to you, they are showing a Mongo USA fan at the World Baseball Classic, chanting USA.
Actually, this Paul Dave is a lot.
Ooh.
First thing you've got to mention here is the additions of Syracuse and Pitts, which is like adding two turds to a lawn.
No one puts the WGCs in the Players' Championship anywhere on the same level as a major fight. So chill out with that.
I actually never knew what meme was, and I always thought it was just MA. And
I wonder what it is like living out there on Saturn.
She was gorgeous, man. This girl was really good looking. And I'm like, holy, is that so-and-so? And I'm seeing him doing a body shot off her, and he's hammered. He turns around, he's like, I love this place.
You know, round apple with the Orioles lettering on it.
They should put the Orioles one in the river.
From Los Angeles, this is Dave in the City, brought to you by Locks of the Week Radio. Now, here's Dave Medina.
Good evening, sports fans, and a pleasure to have you here for this special Tuesday show. Good to have you with us from Santa Monica tonight and across the nation on blogtalkradio.com/Dave in the City. This night, we will be presenting to you a preview of the nation's college basketball teams. And joining us for this preview tonight will be our friend Chris in Syracuse in just a moment or two. Tonight on the show, what we will be doing is we will be going through our season storylines as we do for all the sports that we cover on our podcast. And then we will go conference by conference with a breakdown. We'll start with the big ones, go into mid-majors. And then if we have time, we can even get into some of the smaller conferences that as we go along. So let's get started with it. We have 2 hours tonight. They will be fully dedicated to college basketball. And without further ado, we bring in our guest for the hour for the program tonight, the master savant of college basketball himself, Chris in Syracuse. Chris, welcome back to the show. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. How are you? It's good to be back on the show. It's been a while.
It has been a while. And, you know, as that time has elapsed, a lot of college basketball stories have come to the surface. So I look forward to this. This will be a good recap of some of the teams and a good introduction to some of the others. So, you know, there's a lot to cover tonight. We've already been 2 weeks into the college basketball season. What are some of your initial impressions as we enter week, I think it was week number three, with college basketball across the nation?
Well, everybody knows about the freshmen. We'll get into them. I don't think we've seen a freshman class like this. You know, they come in with a lot of hype, and it seems like every year, you know, the freshmen come in with more and more hype and more pressure on them, and sometimes it's hard for them to live up to the expectations year in and year out, you know. But this year I think we're seeing it so far. We're not, you know, once we get into league play, we'll see it for real, I think. Outside of that, we got the rule changes, the games being called a little bit differently.
Yep. And it really...
And one last thing, as a new ACC fan, I'm really scared because it has not been a good road right now for the ACC, especially this past Sunday. That was bad to watch. And last night was not much fun either.
Yeah, it's early on, obviously, with the new ACC, but that's certainly going to be among our season storylines, which we'll cover. So let's go ahead and cover these one by one now, the season storylines going into the season, which is now underway. Let's get to the first topic, as you mentioned, new rules changes. And basically it amounts to two things that they're going to monitor. Hand checking, which they're basically going to be much more strict about, and a modification of the block charge call. So your thoughts about how they've been calling it so far? Obviously, it's been a rough start, but it seems to be coming along a little bit better from where it was a couple weeks ago. But what was your overall take about the two new rules changes?
Well, first off, you know, I got a little anxious, you know, don't be messing with my game. I really like college basketball. I didn't want, I didn't want to get into a situation where we'd all be yelling, you're ruining the game. But they want more offensive flow, and I get that because, you know, some of the games these past couple years, you know, no, I don't need to have the scores in the 80s for me to be entertained, but some of those ugly 51-49 games just weren't that much fun to watch. And I like physical basketball, but it got ridiculous. And for me, it wasn't so much the hand-checking that I thought was the problem, but guys would be cutting in the lanes, and guys would just, you know, pretty much just push them right out of the way, you know, just chuck them right off the line that they're running on, and, you know, there was no flow. But, you know, they started the season hitting the whistles a lot, and, you know, I got a little, first couple games, I got a little cranky because, you know, you want more flow, but when, you know, a game's taking 2.5 hours and you're shooting 100 free throws and there's 70-some-odd fouls, how's that considered flow?
Right.
When we're just – and another thing it's done is it's shown that some of these kids cannot hit a foul shot if their life depended on it.
Yeah, I've seen that too, yep.
And to tell you the truth, that doesn't really appeal to me either, watching people clang free throws all night. Well, like North Carolina did the other day, missed 26 free throws. 26 they missed.
Man.
And they lost by, you know, by 1 or 2 points. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you just got to hit a couple. And that, but, you know, I thought, and everyone said, be patient, they'll get used to the way they're calling it, they'll start moving their feet a little bit more. And I've been watching the clock on the games. As far as, you know, game starts at 7, when's it over? You know, is it 9:25 or is it 9:05? And the game, you know, they're getting back into more of the 2-hour, 2-hour and 5, 2-hour and 10-minute windows. So I think they're adjusting a little bit. I think the refs are adjusting too. I think they called just everything and everything the first week or so. And now I think they've backed off just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So I think what they're doing is good. Scoring is definitely up.
Oh yeah, that's even evident.
Even in games where, you know, both teams are considered good teams, it's not just, you know, oh well, you know, Kansas blows out, you know, Sisters of the Poor or with 100 points. They were doing that anyway. But even now you're seeing games in the 70s and even in the low 80s. So I can't argue with it. I think it's a good thing. The block charge thing, they've basically taken a lot of the pressure off the referees on it. Now, if they've even so much as started their upward motion, if you're not there, you're never going to get there. It's just going to be a block, and they will call it. I haven't seen a lot of big contact no calls like we've seen, because sometimes there was enough contact. It's like you got to call something one way or the other, and they just let it go. You know, both guys thump to the floor and, you know, play on. But and they're being real stringent about it, and they want to, and they're making it a point. If you're not there by the time they start to go up, you're going to get called. And I like what one of the commentators said on Sunday. He said, you know, if you commit a charge this year, just go check yourself out of the game.
Yeah, I mean, so it's obviously just less work for the official to make. And, I mean, I guess in a sense that's not bad, because obviously that will simplify the officiating to an extent, which could lend to better officiating in the end. Okay, good synopsis of the rules changes. Now let's move to our next topic with Chris in Syracuse. I am Dave Medina, and we will now cover conference realignment, and this is big. This isn't just a 1 or 2 conference deal. This is really affecting the entire of Division I basketball. And as you mentioned earlier in the hour, the ACC probably has the most high profile of the changes, with the introduction of Syracuse and Pitt, among other changes in their conference. The other conferences have been affected. We have a new Big East, and there's also other things in addition to that. In fact, you know, there's a lot to cover, so I will give it to you now to cover the basics of the conference realignment and then maybe your positives and minuses of it to this point. So your thoughts, conference realignment.
Well, it's even kind of hard to put a bow on it right now, because there's still pieces left to fall.
Yep.
Um, big pieces and little pieces. You know, we saw a lot of the big moves announced last year, but it shook up. Anytime there's a shakeup at the top and somebody leaves and another, you know, everybody's looking to fill up their league because they want to keep their league. And it's hurt some of these, and some of the smaller conferences got hurt. Some of them got stronger and better. Some of them are shells of their former selves. And before we go much further, I would like to have a moment of silence for a once great basketball conference. The storied rivalries, the high level of play, the amazing competition, the storied programs involved. I think we're all going to miss the Great West Conference quite a bit. I know I will.
Oh, man. Good stuff. Good stuff. All right. Well, so that's the gist of conference realignment. Now let's focus on the ACC in particular, because this is obviously the conference everyone pays attention to. With the additions of the two Big East schools, or former Big East schools at this point, you know, the idea, the thought from a lot of people is that it became a really, really tough conference. Now, would you say that this is in fact the case, at least in the early going?
On paper, I mean, it is and it still is. There's very good teams. There's a lot of talent. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure it's the deepest conference. There's some rubble in there.
Yep.
And even then, a few teams aren't exactly, you know, Pittsburgh is not a vintage Pittsburgh team this year. It's hard to bet against Jamie Dixon, but, I mean, once in a while you got to have a bit of a down year or a slow period, I guess. And you know, it's tough to bet against them, especially in that gym of theirs. But, you know, they've taken some hits.
Pitt's actually, they've been down for a little while. I don't even remember if they made the tournament at all last year. So it's definitely a transition year or transition era.
Yes, they did.
Oh, they did?
I believe they did.
Wow.
Yeah, they had that. They had Steven Adams,
mm-hmm.
Steve Adams, that 7'1" piece of fluff, who I just so angry watching him. And then he goes and he gets picked in the lottery.
Wow.
Who did? I think it was OKC. I could not. I thought it was a mistake when I saw on draft night when I saw that name. So it can't be the same guy. Nobody in their right mind would pay him money to play basketball.
What round was this? Was it at least the second round?
His first round, it was a lottery pick.
That is unbelievable. Well, that's right. I forget the terms of lottery picks, but yeah, no, that's pretty bad. Okay, well, that's no good. All right, well, let's go ahead and get to our next topic with season storylines, and that is the freshman class, and this really applies to a lot of teams. And some really good players. I think we were talking about this off air, and we were thinking that the NBA draft this year could go 10 deep in terms of first round draft picks. It looks really, really good. The top of the draft is going to be amazing this year. The two standouts that we looked at last week in a high profile game on ESPN were Duke's Jabari Parker and Kansas's Andrew Wiggins. They both had pretty good games. We mentioned that Parker was obviously the more obviously good-looking player right now. But Wiggins certainly isn't bad. I mean, he had a great game himself towards the end. It just didn't look so hot in the beginning. But that's just the beginning. I mean, you've also got Julius, and I stress Julius Randle for Kentucky, and a few other stalwarts of the freshman class. So I wanted to get your thoughts about the freshmen in college basketball and your favorite so far.
So far, my favorite is Jabari Parker, and he looked good again tonight. Duke had a little bit of trouble with East Carolina, but it wasn't Parker. He scored. He drove down the lane late in the game against I think they had six guys on him, and he waded through them. And
yeah, I saw that.
Rack. Duke just had trouble stopping and defending the basketball. Mm-hmm. It was weird. But, no, I think he has all the skills. He has the size for where he's playing, which is like he's some three, some four. He's a big, solid guy, and he's very athletic, and he has a little bit of range, which is good. You know, they can't just pack it in the lane and, expect him not to hurt them. They have to go out and guard him a little bit. I don't know if he has – I don't think he's as quick as Wiggins. Wiggins, from what I see, is he's a little bit skinny, a little bit on the live side. You know, but he's very quick. I think if you put a bigger, slower guy on him in the open – in any kind of space, he's just going to go right on by him. It's just going to be – he's just going to get burned. And, you know, I haven't really seen if he can shoot from consistently from the floor. He's very interested in getting his team involved, which is good. He moves the ball. You know, you're playing there in Bill Self's, you know, feed the big system, which I know you're – I kind of like it. You're no big fan of it.
Yeah, it's. I really think that for a team with that kind of.
Eventually, though, you're going to have. Eventually, you're going to have to, you know, use your star.
Right.
But you know, you're throwing it in there to the other freshman,
mm-hmm.
Embiid, and you know he filled it up tonight.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. He really filled it up, and. It just looked and you know who had another good game? I know I'm getting off track here, but Perry Ellis,
I was going to say.
Again, at one time he was 8 for 10 from the floor.
Wow.
It's not the same guy.
No, it's a complete dramatic transition. He's from freshman to sophomore. That's a tremendous start for Ellis. I mean,
but if we want to keep talking freshman, we're mm-hmm. eventually going to have to touch on Captain Asshole's team. Of course, I mean, you know, John Calipari in Kentucky.
Yep.
Bringing in yet another squad of five touted freshmen. You know, you put it best a little while earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Every year, it's like we got the Fab Five coming in.
Yeah, every year.
And you know, I guess sometimes it's going to work out, and other times we're really going to enjoy watching them fail like last year.
Yep.
I mean, I had the time of my life, especially the Robert Morris game. And yes, I know the shirt. I made a promise. I intend to keep it. But, you know, I know, Sunday I was a little disappointed in Robert Morris's effort, you know, rematch of the century, the Colonials marching into Rupp Arena.
Didn't quite work out
you know,
for that.
Got blown out of the water. A little disappointing.
A little bit. Now, the shirt for which he speaks is a Robert Morris shirt, which he promised to wear and send me a picture of if Robert Morris were to pull off the upset. So it will happen at some point. It's hard
because,
to find, right?
Because
isn't it?
Vitt said it wasn't going to happen at one point during that game. Oh, they have no chance. Oh, this is not – they're not going to do it. And I said, if they do it, I will purchase a Robert Morris Colonial shirt.
And that was very generous of you to do, and – it's not because he's forgotten about it or anything. It's just it's difficult to find a shirt like this. It's not really the biggest of schools, folks. I mean, you're talking about a merchandising shop that has a staff of like one. They got to produce the shirts in the back, print it out. I mean, the guy is doing his best to get that hold of this thing.
Hey, big things going down in Moon Township, Pennsylvania.
There you go.
Home of John Calipari, which
happens.
I thought was funny.
That is
he came home and got beat.
Yeah.
As far as Kentucky, we know Randall. We know Julius Randall.
Mm-hmm.
A big force inside. He is a load. He's strong like bull, and he is just a load to handle inside. You're not gonna body him out. I just don't think it's gonna happen. That being said, it looks like his range is about 8 feet and in. He's a near the basket player, which limits him a little bit. It's, you know, not fatal. It's always nice to have a big guy who can play near the hoop. But, you know, that means he's not going to be able to do it all himself. But, you know, you got the Harrison twins playing guard. I really haven't seen it from them yet. One of them, twins, how are you going to tell them apart? One of them had a real good game against Robert Morris, but, you know, all joking aside, that is not the big time. That is saying I need to see some consistency out of them. They were just about invisible when they played Michigan State. you know, you tout these guys, they got to come in and produce because you have no one else. You have no upperclassmen. I think there was only five kids from last year's team still on Kentucky, and that might include the ball boy and the student manager. It might, but, you know, the couple guys that they do have that were around, like Poitras, he's got to be more consistent than he was last year for me, provide some leadership. And I still don't understand why people make a big deal over Willie Cauley-Stein. He has just about no offensive skill. He can rebound. He can play some defense. But as far as when they have the ball, he's not really a factor. Maybe on the offensive glass. But anything he gets, he really doesn't have an offensive game. He doesn't have a go-to move. But, I mean, with Randall in there, that's really not going to be his primary job.
I see.
But still, I hear people, you know, making a big deal out of him sometimes and it just not doing it for me. Sometimes I think these prophecies become, you know, they feed on themselves, you know, because we said that, because someone said, you know, this is going to be a great team of freshmen. People believe it's going to be a great team of freshmen, but they got to go out and do it. I mean, to talk the way they were talking over pursuing perfection, and the words 40-0 came out. In fact, they in the bookshop, they had a T-shirt they showed. It said, Pursuit of Perfection. And the day after, they had a picture the day after the Michigan State game, on sale for
$1.99. Can't make it up. Can't make it up. That's a riot, my friend. It is. Oh, boy. Yeah, this is... So Kentucky will once again try to roll the dice with five freshmen, and we will see how that goes. It's anybody's guess, honestly. I mean, they have the talent to make a run all the way to the national championship game, but execution is always going to be a question because there's not enough time spent together. So I think you summarized that very well. Very well, well done, Mr. Kristen Syracuse. Now we go into our conference-by-conference breakdown, and there will be many of them to cover tonight, so we'll go through these one by one, but we start with the big one, the ACC, and this is a conference for which you will now be very familiar with the entry of your hometown Syracuse Orange and Pitt as the new members. But we have some other, obviously many other teams are in contention, and Duke will be the odds-on favorite to win it all in this conference. So your thoughts about the ACC?
I think the consensus favorite is Duke, and I'm not going to disagree there. They got, in addition to Parker, they have Rodney Hood. He looks like a real good player. He's came in from Mississippi State, by way of Mississippi State. Quinn Cook looks to be improved. Rashid Suleiman, another kind of, he's not going to be a big scorer, but he does a lot of other things, and, you know, the big question is, with the absence of Ryan Kelly, will they have enough outside scoring to balance out inside? Oh, they still have a Plumlee brother left. I was surprised to see that. It's like about the seventh or eighth one, I think.
Yeah, I know.
When was the last time they did not have a big white Plumlee in there? But that would be my concern, is if they have enough outside scoring. You know, these ACC games might get rough, and you might need a three late. And, you know, the question is going to be who's going to be that guy to try to get the look.
Mm-hmm.
After that, you know, I was tossing up UNC and Syracuse, and to maybe just to not be a homer, I picked North Carolina second. And then Sunday happened, and I reversed myself and put Syracuse second. And then after Syracuse last night, I really don't know. But in any case, North Carolina, they're an athletic team, and they love to run. That's not anything really new. That's not shocking. But they also have a couple guys, P.J. Hairston and Leslie McDonald. They have them on the pine right now. You know, NCAA is investigating something or another. Hairston has had legal troubles. And when the NCAA is involved in deciding anything, I mean, it's like spin the wheel of justice.
And it takes like
they'll get suspended a half. Maybe they'll never play again. You just don't know.
Yeah. And it takes them forever.
I know two cases are alike, but also it's, you know, there seems to be no consistency either. Mm-hmm. And what you're saying is right. Yep. You know, it could take who knows how long before they even decide if these guys, if they get them back by the conference season, you know, they'll look pretty good, I think. But without them, they look kind of, they couldn't hit a foul shot against Belmont, couldn't really defend the long ball against Belmont. And if you stop them and play them in the half and make them play in the half court, they're not that good. A lot of people like McAdoo, but he really doesn't have much of an inside game. He plays on the run. If you drive the lane and, you know, they come off of him, he'll definitely put it home. But he's kind of skinny. He'll grab some rebounds. He couldn't hit a foul shot either.
Wow.
But all in all, just not an impressive performance from UNC. And I think that a team like Syracuse with the zone could really give them problems and slow them down. A long team like that, long athletic team like Syracuse, could really give them problems.
Mm-hmm. Well, that covers the top of the conference pretty well. Anything that we should look for as far as the rest of the ACC?
Well, Syracuse is there, and there's mm-hmm. definitely talent. Some of it's a little raw. Tyler Ennis is still feeling his way at point guard. There's been times I've thought that it might be better in the hand. The ball might be better in the hands of Michael Benajay, who's a Duke transfer. Didn't play last year practice, but didn't play. But Benajay seems to be a crafty player. He's not really a shooter, not really a fill-it-up guy, but handles the ball well and seems to make good decisions. C.J. Fair could be the best player in the conference. He's put the team on his back a couple times already. Scoring over 20 a game.
Mm-hmm.
Jeremy Grant's an athletic freak. He's a bench player in name only. He will get starters minutes. He will be used as an igniter off the bench at the first timeout just about every game, I'm sure. Only problem is he gets to the line a lot and he sucks. I have 43% last year. He sucks.
Yeah.
But a lot of times, you know, he's already made 2 points on the possession, so that's good. Up front, I don't think Rakeem Christmas is ever going to develop into anything more than he is now. He's a decent shot blocker and rebounder, and when there's nobody on him and he actually catches the ball, he will throw down a powerful dunk. But as far as, like, making moves with his back to the basket, it's just not going to happen.
Mm.
Daywon Coleman, sophomore, has lost a lot of weight, which he needed to do, and he looked good. He looked good last night. I know it was the Terriers of St. Francis, Brooklyn, and they struggled with him, but he came out and against the small guys just made him pay. Just a lot of offensive rebounds. Syracuse almost let that game get away. There was under 3 minutes left, and St. Francis was ahead. It was terrifying.
Yeah,
And then Syracuse locked down the defense, scored the last 10 points, and, you know, got out of there with the win.
Mm-hmm. You know, that seems to be the running meme for a number of teams. We also saw it with Duke today. We already talked about this earlier in the show, but it's just part of the early season jitters, I think. But they always find a way to win. That's the key. If they're losing these games, it's really bad. So I think that looks fine. I mean, as long as you win the game, you're okay. But you're right. I mean, obviously, it's an opportunity for a lot of out of conference teams to really take a game here and there. I mean, we see the same thing in the Pac-12. So, early season jitters is I think how I look at it. So, Chris, let's go to the Big Ten, which I think is the deepest conference right now in college basketball. I mean, is there really a gimme in this conference? And I would say the answer is no. Everybody looks pretty good. Michigan State obviously would be the one to look for. They made a great run in the Final Four, great run in the tournament last year, And it looks like some of their guys are returning. Gary Harris will be there. Michigan, you know, Michigan's going to be interesting. They're going to lose some guys, but they've still got some talent. Ohio State, we'll see what happens there. Aaron Kraft will be back. And then you've got Indiana, who's lost almost everybody because that was a veteran team. And then Iowa, Illinois, you look out for them. Nebraska. I mean, there's a lot to look for in the Big Ten. Your thoughts about that conference?
I like Michigan State to win. Gary Harris, hopefully he can. Man, the guy plays with such speed and aggression. He's almost bound to be suffering from some kind of bump or bruise, but I don't really think he was that healthy last year, and they brought a lot of back around him. Appling, Adrian Payne, Brandon Dawson, got some, I mean, Payne, if he stays out of foul trouble, can just light it up on the inside, and that's how they got that big lead against Kentucky in the marathon game, in the ESPN marathon game. It was just feeding him inside, and he was taking it right to him. But then he got into foul trouble and was, you know, limited his effectiveness, limited his time on the floor. He's got to be out there. But again, I think they're going to learn how to stay out of foul trouble with the new rules. You know, at least one of them, I can't remember them all, but at least one of them was probably something silly.
Right, right.
But I mean, they just beat the number one team in the country. They are the number one team in the country right now, and I think they'll be the number one team in the conference. I think their in-state rival will be right behind them. They lost Trey Burke and, you know, Hardaway Jr., but they could have also lost Mitch McGarry and Glenn Robinson III as well, and they didn't. They decided to come back. McGarry's going to give guys a lot of trouble with the size. Robinson, I still stand by what I saw from him last year. It's like as soon as they figured out what his game was, they were able to stop him. So he's going to need a new ripple or two.
Because
this go right at the rim is just, you know, they know. But they'll also have Nick Stauskas, who, you know, he shot 44% from beyond the arc last year. That helped spread the floor. And see more floor time from little Spike Albrecht, the hero of the championship game last year for at least the first half, coming out of nowhere with those bombs. How many hit? 3-4 of them out there, the little guy? He'll be on the floor more. And they have a freshman point guard, Derek Wilson. He already looks pretty good, and there's, you know, it's only been a few games, so he'll probably improve. He seems to make good decisions with the ball. He can put it on the deck and score a little bit. Ohio State, I see third. They lost to Deshaun Thomas. Their defensive is stifling. They whacked Marquette the other day. And what was just, to call it basketball is a little bit of charity, actually. But just no one could score. The defense was stifling. But that's who they are. They have Aaron Kraft, might be the best defensive guard, if not the best defensive player in the country. He can steal the ball. He won't foul. He moves his feet. He's quick. He's got quick feet, quick hands. He's improved his offense just about every year he's been there, and he knows what he's doing out there. The question is will LaQuinton Ross step up and fulfill some of his potential as a scorer? He's done well, but, you know, there's certain expectations put on kids and hype, and, you know, I don't think he's lived up quite yet.
Interesting. So that's pretty good. Pretty good look at everything. How about Wisconsin? Now they have not finished lower than fourth in the basically under Bo Ryan's entire tenure there. So they're going to have a lot of returning starters or a lot of returning pieces, I suppose. And so that actually would favor them because usually in a situation where you have a lot of returning guys, as in any sport, really, you'll end up being a pretty good team. So your thoughts about Wisconsin as in the middle of this Big Ten conference?
Well, as you said, they haven't finished worse than fourth under Bo Ryan, which has been like 11 or 12 years now. So
wow.
I picked them fourth.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, otherwise, Otherwise, it just wouldn't make sense.
That's a perfect spot.
They lost a couple guys, but Ben Burst is back, and Sam Decker is a star, good inside guy. They got Josh Gasser back from an ACL injury, which, you know, they were expecting to have him last year. They didn't, but they got him back this year, and he's a quick guy, good defense, does a lot of little things. Not he could score, but, you know, Decker will be scoring. Brust will be scoring. I don't think they're going to have a problem. They're going to produce some probably close to unwatchable games. They always do. That's just Bo Ryan's way. That's why John in Connecticut isn't a big fan of his. But, you know, they're going to win their games. I think the team that probably got hurt the most in the Big Ten, though, is Indiana. I mean, they lost Cody Zeller, Victor Oladipo, Christian Wofford, and Jordan Hulls. There is no way to replace that. Will Sheehy, good player. Yogi Ferrell could be a star. They'll be in the hunt, but, you know, they were the number one team for at least a little while last year before suffering some almost unexplainable losses. Especially, well, I can explain the one to Minnesota is that Trevor Mbakwe kicked the shit out of Cody Zeller all night long.
Ooh, right. You were never big on him, though, right? Weren't you the one that was really down on Zeller?
I really wasn't, and that was just about all the proof I needed to make my argument, because he took it. Mbakwe took it to him for 40 minutes.
Wow.
Minnesota's down because they don't have Mbakwe or Rodney Williams.
Mm-hmm.
They will have Andre Hollins. They're going to be a middle of the pack, if not. I mean, what you think? I mean, I could see seven bids come out of the league, and you know, they're probably good enough for seventh.
You think Illinois will factor into that?
Illinois.
Oh, you're just getting to that.
What's
okay.
That?
You were just getting to Illinois. I was going to ask about them. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think they could finish seventh as well, but, I mean, Brandon Paul and DJ Richardson being gone off of what I thought was an overachieving surprise team from last year. You lose your two big stars. And then they transfer in Ahmed Starks from Oregon State, and who's a great player, but they're not clearing him to play this year. So kind of a talent drain at Illinois.
I see.
John Gross, I mean, he's a good coach, and maybe he'll figure it out. I mean, in Iowa, I figure maybe sixth. So I think it's, you know, Illinois, Minnesota for that seventh spot. Iowa, you know, they were a bubble team last year, and they get four of the guys back, four of the starters back, including the leading scorer. So, you know, I really don't see them. They shouldn't drop off anyway.
Right.
I don't know if they have the pure all-out talent to, you know, be in the top third of this league. Yeah, I mean, because the talent up there is, you know, spectacular, but be a good team and, you know, make the dance this year, I think, is, you know, very probable for Iowa.
Well, we'll follow the dance as we go along through the course of the season in the Big Ten, and now we bring it out west to the Pac-12. Let's look at what we have there. Arizona probably is going to be it. I think they are the consensus favorite there. They did lose three of the top four scorers, but even so, it looks like this is going to be quite a good team. And in addition, you've got Oregon and Colorado at the top. The other two teams I want to take a look at, interestingly, are UCLA and USC, and they have new coaches. At UCLA, will be getting the Steve Alford, who last was in New Mexico, blowing it in the conference in the NCAA tournament. But his slow style of basketball comes to Westwood, so we'll see what happens there. Meanwhile, across town, Enfield brings his FGCU high-paced style of basketball. You talk about a tale of two cities, this is it. But that's just a local story. The Pac-12 in general is just going to be Arizona and everybody else. So let's get your breakdown now of it. How do you see the Pac-12?
Same as you do. Aaron Gordon's a beast. Their bigs might not be the biggest stars, but they're big and they're experienced. Brandon Ashley and Caleb Tarzewski. They're very good. T.J. McConnell, they transferred in guard T.J. McConnell from Duquesne. I know they played Fairleigh Dickinson last night and just picked them apart, but McConnell did look good. It's hard to judge in a game like that, but, you know, it's the only time I've been able to see him so far. Oregon could compete, but, you know, I still think Oregon's good. Damian Dotson, Dominic Artis in the backcourt. Joseph Young from Houston is another decent player. He'll be eligible this year. And Mike Mosier from UNLV. Is it UNLV? I think so. I don't have it written down. He's been a couple places. I think he started at UCLA, if I'm not mistaken. But he transfers in. You know, will he be able to, you know, regain his form? I don't know.
I see. Well, pretty good look at it from the most part. And as far as with the team I'm going to be looking at this year at USC, they're probably a year away, so it's really not even worth discussing. I mean, obviously, any infield's recruiting is said to be really good, but we're not really going to see a team take shape for another year at the minimum. So, I mean, it'll be fun to check it out, but I don't think there'll be anything serious to look at with SC.
Oh, for sure. He's just got to get in his guys, I think. I think eventually he'll probably do okay.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, the expectations won't be over the top. I mean, it's not like Kentucky where you have to basically make a run at a title every year to have a successful career. I mean, SC basketball is a completely different ballgame from their football program. Not even close to the same level of expectation. So it's a good spot, actually. I think he gets a bigger market, a nice hotbed for recruiting, and a program that doesn't necessarily have to be the best in the entire conference in order for him to be a success.
Right, and if you want to talk about coaches in the conference, I think it's put up or shut up time for Johnny Dawkins.
Yep.
In fact, I think the athletic director kind of pretty much said he has got to make the tournament or he's gone. And the thing is, I think they have the pieces to do it.
But I think so.
Will they play defense?
Oh, that's the problem.
I mean, when they play BYU, that game in the tip-off marathon, you give up 112 points or whatever it was, 112 points.
And that was at home, wasn't it?
Game.
Yeah, that was at home at Stanford, I believe.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, man.
I mean, they locked it down the next game, but forgot who they were playing. They weren't playing BYU, I know that.
Yeah, no, they did better in their second game. I forget who they played to, but Stanford and Johnny Dawkins are definitely going to be on very thin ice. I mean, if you were to just quickly make the prediction, do you think he makes it to next season? Just quick on your head. Does he make it, yes or no?
Yes.
You think he's going to make it because of the talent, right?
I think they're going to squeak in.
Wow.
I think there might come a Sunday in March where they're sitting around waiting.
Mm-hmm. In a room, waiting for a TV announcement.
Yep.
No boy. On the bubble.
Cameras on them, facing them.
I love it. All right, we'll
wondering where they're going to go.
Yeah, that's where you'd rather be there than not in contention at all, right?
Right.
All right. So very good. Now, it's a little bit about Arizona State. I mean, anything that you have to offer, anything that you can offer as far as their team, does that look like a competitive rivalry between them and their cross-state rival?
No, not after Evan Gordon transferred.
I see.
Carrick Felix went to the NBA. He's not good enough for the NBA, but, you know, Jahel Carson's back. He scored a lot last year, but you know, it takes more than one guy. Tentatively, I have them at seventh. I just don't think this is going to be a year, kind of a restocking year.
I see. Yeah.
For the Sun Devil.
Okay. Well, it can't always be that both teams end up having the juice, and I think that generally speaking, if U of A is the one doing the job, that seems to be you know, a position where all is right in the world. So we'll go from that and move on to our next conference, the SEC or the Kentucky SEC or whatever you want to call it. It really is, it amounts to Kentucky and maybe a little bit of juice from Tennessee, but overall, this is pretty much going to be their conference to lose. So your thoughts about the SEC and who can contend with the Wildcats this year?
Well, SEC basketball is not SEC football.
No.
That is for sure. Kentucky is going to win. Second place, I'm tossing it up between Florida and Tennessee. Florida, like North Carolina, you got two kids waiting, you know, if and when they're going to see the floor. And this seems more like Billy Donovan's doing than whatever they did. It was violation of team rules or something, you know, with Scotty Wilbekin and one other. And he said that they need to do things to earn their way back into the Wilbekin's practicing. The other guy, I think his name's Harris. I don't know exactly. I'm blanking on him now, but apparently he isn't even, quote, with the program. So, you know, I'm sure they probably will get, you know, they can say as much as we're going to do the right thing or he's got to earn it. Push comes to shove in conference play, your best guys are going to be out there unless, you know, they're either in jail or the NCAA says they can't be.
All right, very interesting viewpoint, very interesting stuff.
I mean, they did lose their top three scorers last year, mm-hmm. Mike Rosario, Eric Murphy, Kenny mm-hmm. Boynton, Patrick Young up front with Will You Get Young. I don't think he's ever going to be great like some may have thought he was going to be, but he's a good piece. You know, they transferred in Dorian Finney-Smith, good guard. But they're going to have to hold off Tennessee. I think I'm almost certain this will be the team that finally gets Konzo Martin to the big dance. Jarnell Stokes, Jordan McRae, Jerron Maimon, they're all back. Yeah, Trey Golden, the point guard, left. They transferred in Antonio Barton from Memphis. He'll give good minutes at point guard. He's not the flashiest of players. He's not the one that you show off, but, you know, he'll play good solid basketball for you.
Right.
So I do think that this, unless they horribly choke, this Tennessee team's going to be playing meaningful basketball in March.
And they're not afraid to get into it. They're not afraid to get physical with teams either. I mean, I was reading about how some of their core guys wouldn't have any problem, and particularly, I think you were looking at Stokes in particular and maybe Maimon wouldn't have any issue getting into it with, you know, a guy like Julius Randle over in Kentucky. So, I mean, do you like that attitude? Does that seem like the kind of confidence that you'd want to see from the Tennessee Volunteers?
Oh, I love it. I love physical basketball. I love players who will be physical. They're just going to have to, you know, with the new rules and everything, they're just going to have to, you know, temper it a little bit and, you know, be smart about it.
Right.
Or else they won't be on the floor for very long.
I dig.
That attitude's got to be under control this year mm-hmm. for anybody.
No question. Now, I would be remiss, Chris, if we did not bring up the the center of all Mongoism in college basketball, and that would be Marshall Henderson Central and Ole Miss. This is basically a one-man team, quite literally, and I think even now it's not even a deep team, as if it was before, but it's even less deep this year. I mean, how many shots is this guy going to jack up this season?
All of them.
I know.
At least last year he had a couple. At least last year he had a couple pieces. Murphy Holloway and Reginald Buckner inside to just grab the rebounds, I guess.
Right. And
all of his misses. But he is just going to. If you thought he was irresponsibly jacking up shots before,
oh boy,
you haven't seen anything yet.
Yeah, baby, that's going to be fun.
And he will probably do something stupid trying to antagonize opposing fans during the game.
It's a lock. I mean, he's going to rile up somebody before the season's done. Maybe multiple times.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, boy.
Before we leave the SEC, I just want to mention LSU.
Mm-hmm.
They look good in a close loss to UMass on the morning of the tip-off classic. Return their top two scorers and get another inside presence with Jordan Mickey, who really kind of came out in maybe not nowhere, but a little unexpected. He was very solid inside, especially when the big star, Johnny O'Brien III, was on the bench with foul trouble. There was a lot of that on that 30-hour of college basketball. A lot of guys in foul trouble, a lot of ugliness. But like I said, they've kind of adjusted. But I think LSU could possibly make a little bit of noise, finish in the top half, and who knows come selection Sunday.
Oh, very good. You know, LSU certainly has a proud basketball history as well. I think that's also the home of Shaquille O'Neal. And if I'm remembering correctly, it even goes back to Pistol Pete Maravich, who played there. Don't quote me on that. I'll check it out a little bit later. But that'd be good to see them back in the mix. Okay, next conference. And we are just getting started here on the college basketball preview with Chris in Syracuse. I'm Dave Medina, and we are covering as many of these as we can tonight. So up next, the new Big East, which is sort of a conglomeration of the original Big East and the A-10 and maybe some Conference USA, if I'm not mistaken. This is going to be interesting to break down, so I'll give it to you to tell us the skinny on who's who in the new Big East.
Actually, the new Big East is just everyone who didn't play football in the old Big East, plus Creighton. it's the Brad U.
Brad U, yeah.
Brad U.
Brad U. I gotcha.
He might. You know, they got the McDermotts in there now. I think they'll have a good year. He might have to shit on cars once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
I think Marquette, even that brutal game against Ohio State, I still think Marquette can win this league, even though they lost three starters. They still have Devontae Gardner and Jamil Wilson up front. That's pretty good. They're bringing in two highly touted guards. Buzz Williams is a very underrated recruiter, I think. You know, even considering some of the guys he's, you know, had there at Marquette, I still think that he's not seen as, you know, no one says, oh, great recruiter, Buzz Williams. And I don't understand why. He's a heck of a coach. They also, you know, they got the four-star recruit in Deontay Burton. I think he's the, I believe if I read it right, he's the best recruit coming into the conference. So, you know, even if not this year for him, you know, it looks bright down this year and down the road for Marquette. I think Creighton can finish second in this league. McDermott, obviously, you know, one of the most prolific scorers in the land. Grant Gibbs also returns. It's a new league. It's going to be a little bit bigger. It's going to be a little bit more physical, and it's definitely a step up in the competition. The question isn't if they can score; it's if they can get enough stops, and if they can, you know, improve on their defense a little bit and get the stops, they should be able to finish second in the league and compete all year round.
Beauty.
Behind that's Georgetown. Otto Porter's gone. There's no replacement for something like that. And if anyone thinks that fat ass Josh Smith is going to replace Otto Porter type production, they're sadly mistaken.
Oh boy, Joshua Smith is in that team. Did he transfer from UCLA
yes,
then?
Yes, he is.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. What a waste of space. I got to be honest here. I'm sorry. Wow. I mean,
that's a lot of space.
It's
too.
A lot of space. Yeah. Holy smokes.
They have some. I mean, they have some other good pieces.
Mm-hmm.
Markel Starks and Jabril Trawick, good backcourt. But they have a pretty good front court, too. But it's going to be a step back without Porter.
He
did just about everything. No, one game against Syracuse was ridiculous. I mean, they smoked Syracuse both times in the regular season. It was embarrassing.
Right.
So glad they got that. So glad they got that win in overtime in the Big East tournament, because nobody, I'm sure they don't like it down there any more than I would have liked it up here to end the, you know, the Big East, the most storied rivalry in the Big East on a sour note.
Right.
But luckily we got that win. And it's great that we got that win because that's what's going to be remembered. No one's going to give a shit that we ended up getting housed by Louisville after leading by about 70 or whatever it was in the Big East final there. And Louisville came back and housed Syracuse, but nobody's going to care.
Well, Louisville did go on to win the championship, so obviously it wasn't that bad of a loss.
And Syracuse went on to the Final Four, so yep. Which is a good year for them.
Yeah, you see, that worked out fine for both teams. So,
For Unclever, I think St. John's might have the most athletic team in the league.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is it's the same team. It's just about the same team last year that went 17-16. It couldn't score against good defense. So, you know, they have a lot of up-and-down talent, and Steve Lavin isn't the best X's and O's guys. I don't think he's the guy who's going to get the most out of the talent. He can bring talent in,
right?
But you gotta do something with it. I mean, if he was a great coach, he'd still be, you know, out west like he was. But he's not, so. And Villanova, I think, should make a bit of a run, returning four starters, Archie Diacono, Javon Pinkston. They got to replace Yaru inside, but Jay Wright will figure it out. They just trashed Towson the other day, and Towson's an actually surprising, should be a good team. I thought that was going to be a good game.
Right.
Villanova made it not a good game.
Ugh.
And on a last note here, Butler, so good for so long, it's going to be ugly.
Ooh, yeah.
It's gonna be an ugly year.
I can't disagree with that. I mean, Brad Stevens, basically the heart of that team, the coach of the team, isn't a part of the team any longer. He went to Boston, and I don't mean Boston like Boston College. I mean the Boston Celtics in the NBA. So this is sad news for Butler. I feel the same way. I feel like this is probably going to be the beginning of the end for him. That's too bad. So on to the next conference with Chris in Syracuse. I am Dave Medina. We have about an hour and 2 minutes remaining in our preview, so we'll spend this time now getting into some of the mid-majors along with the big teams. So two of the biggest conferences remain in our preview then before we get to our mid-majors. The first of these is the old Big East, which we now call the AAC. For the moment, Louisville will be in the conference, and they should, by definition, being the defending champions, be the favorite. So we'll take a look at this. This is the best it's ever going to be for the AAC, and it'll be its first year, which is a transitional year. So let's get into it. Your thoughts on AAC?
Well, you said it correct. It's a very good conference this year, but this is probably, and it's sad to say in the ceiling, it's sad to say in the first year that this is the ceiling, but they're going to lose Louisville next year. And Rutgers, but I don't care.
Yeah, who cares about Rutgers?
Rutgers basketball. They lost to Drexel tonight.
Are you serious? Wow. Okay.
Drexel might figure to win their conference, so it's not awful, but they lost to Drexel. Basically, the AAC is the Big East football misfits. The uh-huh. best of Conference USA and Temple.
Yeah, Temple out of the blue.
That's what's remaining here.
Wow.
So past Louisville, who, you know, even without Peyton Siva, they still have Russ Diculous, Russ Smith, and Shane Bahan, and he's back on the floor after whatever he did to be off the floor. Kevin Ware story, you know, that's a good story. Good to see him back on the floor after that mess that happened last year.
Yep.
That's scary. That was scary. That was. But they're just going to run up and down. They're going to press every possession. They're going to run you ragged, and they will compete for the national championship again. It's hard to gauge them now because they're taking a tour of the nation's cupcakes in their non-conference schedule.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, they're doing what they have to do. They had another 30-point win tonight against whoever was unlucky enough to schedule them.
Wow.
down from them is UConn.
Yep.
What a job Kevin Ollie's done there.
I agree with that.
What a job.
Absolutely.
I mean, he comes in last year with no guarantee of his status, you know? Not a guarantee that he would be there beyond last year. They did the right thing, gave him a contract. He's their coach, as he should be, to do what he did last year and get those kids who weren't postseason eligible, to get them to play like they did with the heart that they played with was great. If they could play, I think they might be a little bit better this year, and they're eligible again. I thought they overachieved last year, but Napier's back, Boatwright's back, DeAndre Daniels is going to be a big piece, bigger piece than he has been, is back. Omar Calhoun, another developing young guard, they're going to get him some minutes. Niles Jafai has come out this year hitting three after three after three. He doesn't have much of an inside game, which, you know, you could almost hang around him on the outside, but I forgot who I was watching them play, some crap team, Yale, and they were losing him on the perimeter. And he's standing there alone making threes. He made, I think, five in the first half in that game. But, no, they're a loaded team. They'll play good. I like what they got going in UConn. I almost wish that they could find a better conference home that's going to have some long-term stability.
Well, we'll see about that. I mean, you do still have Cincinnati and you know, Sean Kilpatrick, and even Temple could eventually be good. And you got Memphis. So, I mean, it might be all right.
Well, you don't think Cincinnati's looking for a place to put their football program that's better than this place?
Well, I mean...
You know, that was the best thing about, like, the media days for this school. It's like, for this conference, everyone's looking at each other like, who are you? I'm here for now, but I'm leaving. And, you know, it was very, very weird if you looked at it like that. It's like, do we know you? Are you with us now?
Well,
at the media day conference.
I suppose so.
I thought it was pretty funny. And UConn and Cincinnati saying, oh yeah, we're in this for the long haul. This is going to be our conference. It's like the Big 12 or, you know, Big 10 came calling to you tomorrow. You would be gone in 2 minutes. You know, don't give me that. You wouldn't be.
All right.
I think Cincy moves up for me, in their tip-off game, they looked very solid. I don't know if there's enough around Kilpatrick. I couldn't even think of anybody else to write down in my notes, even after looking at the roster of who will be contributing. But you know, he's a great guard. He scores. He even rebounds. I think they moved up one tonight because, you know, after watching Memphis, they got smacked good tonight.
Oh, really?
This is a step up in competition for them. I think they're in for a little bit of an awakening.
Well, I'll tell you what. I mean, the team they lost to tonight, Oklahoma State, they're pretty good. We'll get to them in a minute, but right now, I mean, that's a very good point you make about
pretty
Memphis.
Good doesn't mean you lose by 30 if you're supposed to be pretty good.
Well, that is a little more than good. I mean, all right. Now, quickly on SMU before we switch to our next conference.
SMU?
Yep, SMU.
A little bit of a rising program with Vid, and I think Vid was a little surprised to see Larry Brown as the coach. Yes,
yep.
Knicks fans, Larry Brown coaching the ponies out at SMU.
Wow.
The Mustangs.
Yep. Out of the ether he comes.
The thing is, you know, the program was in shambles, you know. Nobody coming in. It's going nowhere. It's
right.
in the basement of Conference USA or whatever conference before all this crap went down that they were playing in. Big 12, I don't even know where they were before that. I think Conference USA, at least for a little while. But it was just a weird deal how they brought him in. They brought him in, but I'm not going to be the permanent coach here. I'm just, you know, going to get the... program going and whatever.
Chris, has he ever been the permanent coach anywhere? I mean, he even if he says he's going to be the permanent coach.
Well, you tell me.
He's only been anywhere for like a year or two. I mean, ever. So it's always interesting with Larry Brown. But anyway, go ahead.
Well, yeah, he wasn't even coming in as, you know, it's like, oh, I'm just going to do this for a couple years and, you know, get the program ahead. Look, how are you supposed to recruit like that?
Right, right. That's
like,
a good
yeah,
point.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm going to be here. I might decide to quit. That's a good sell. To
Real selling point, yeah.
But, hey, they got some talent now, and they got even more coming. Pretty good talent coming in this year. They got better talent coming in next year. So maybe he knows what he's doing.
Hey, there
and
we
if
go.
You did have Larry Brown on in the over for one year plus in the pool for coaching, I guess you win.
Well, there you go.
I mean, how many people would have bet that he'd see a second year, like Vid said? But
right,
you know, we'll I have them eighth. They won't make the dance. They won't be a big factor. But you know, program on the rise. You got a well-known coach, so I thought it was worth mentioning.
Good stuff. All right, so let's move on to the next. Let's get into our next conference, the A-10, the Atlantic 10, former home of Butler, and but now that's the home of VCU, who's still there, UMass, Western Kentucky, and LaSalle. A lot of very pesky teams that make up this conference, but obviously VCU's had the most success in recent years. So let's take a look at the A-10. What are your thoughts about that conference?
I think VCU should be a clear favorite. The Havoc D causes a lot of problems. It might even be better than ever with the athletes that Shaka Smart brings in. But again, this year you're going to have to, if you're going to play defense all 90 feet, you got to make sure not to be hand-checking these guys and touching these guys. You know, that's, you know, if you're playing defense for 45 feet, you know, that's, playing it for 90 feet, you know, that's just more opportunity for a foul, if you ask me. But they're good. They're ball hawks. They have a couple guys who can shoot, like Bob Brandenburg. The problem is that Darius Theus is gone, and he was a great defender, but when they got the ball, he made sure that he was a highly efficient player. He might not have put up the biggest assist numbers, but he really didn't turn the ball over that much. He was very, very smart with it and very efficient in it. You know, it did VCU good for a number of years. But they also have Javonte Redick this year, and which could help them on the offensive end, because finally, with all these shooters and drivers, they finally have a big man presence down low that can actually produce some offense that they can throw the ball into. Even if he's just going to kick it back out, they have to respect it. The other teams have to respect it. So that should help them, at least help make up for the loss of Theus a little bit.
Oh, that's good to know.
Yeah, there's some good teams behind there. UMass, they look good against LSU on marathon morning. Chaz Williams, I think they list him at 5'9". I don't think he's anywhere near 5'9 or 5'10". I don't think he's anywhere near that. But, man, he plays with a lot of heart. He might be the league's best player. He even averages close to, like, 4 rebounds a game. He just gets after it. He does it all. He gets knocked around quite a bit. But he just never stops. Derek Gordon, he's a transfer in. He's already contributing with Williams in the backcourt. And Cody Lalane is he could be a force. He's a must-watch player in the front court. So they have a very balanced attack. They play decent defense. Lalane's got to stay out of foul trouble. He got into foul trouble against LSU. Missed some big free throws as well, so, you know, got to clean that up.
Right, right.
LaSalle lost, they've already lost to
Manhattan?
To Manhattan.
Yep.
I think, yeah, pretty good team, though, to start the season. And they lost Ramon Galloway, but everyone else is back. I just don't think they're going to be able to play the defense or have the size that's going to be required to win the league. I think they could dance come March. Quick team. They're going to score. But I don't think they're as good as they were last year. St. Louis is not as good as they were last year. They lost pretty much a lot of their production and pretty much all their leadership. They had a mission last year. Everybody was on board, you know, with Coach Majerus passing away. I think everyone kind of ramped it up, gave them a focus, gave them, you know, something to. I'm not saying that, you know, I've never been one to really buy into that whole inspiration thing, but I think they were definitely all united and together last year, and they made a good run. But Cody Ellis is gone. They were the best defense in the league last year. Don't know if they can be again, but they're going to need to be.
Yeah,
because I don't think they're going to put up. I just don't think they're going to put up the numbers again.
Well, I would agree with you on that. I mean, it was a very difficult situation for St. Louis. I mean, having to go from that to a completely different coach now. And I don't know whether the interim ended up staying on or who is the coach right now, but it's a tough situation because if, you know, a coach in a basketball team ends up being the entire personality of the team, and when you're rocked in that manner, it's tough to recover from that right away. So I'm not expecting big things from St. Louis either. All right, so that covers the Atlantic 10. Very nicely done, Mr. Chris in Syracuse, our guest tonight. Now to some other conferences, and we'll continue to run them down the line. Mountain West, and you know we've looked at the Mountain West
assholes
over the past couple years, and I understand you're not too high on them right now.
No, not those assholes. Not after last March. Freaking make me a believer, and then come up with shit on the first weekend, destroyed my bracket.
Oh, boy.
Lit it on fire and pissed on it. You have the top RPI in the nation as a conference, and you go and you do that. And to make matters better this year, they're not anywhere near as good as they were last year.
Mm-mm.
What a talent drain out of this conference. And I can't say I'm sad. I picked Boise State to win because they returned five decent starters in a conference that lost so much. Anthony Dremick is pretty good, though. Derek Marks. The defense is going to have to pay attention from them. They have another good shooter, Elaragria, I think his name is. Elaraga. He can, if I remember correctly, he's a very good outside shooter especially when he's open, and he should get open looks. Don't know if they can play well enough up front. Ryan Watkins, he can rebound. He's pretty big, but not much for front court scoring. But it's college basketball. Front court scoring is nice. It can get you over the hump. But if you don't have it, it's not always fatal.
It's not a priority necessarily, right? Especially in tournament play, because obviously the front point guard play is usually a much bigger deal. Let me get a couple of quick hitters on these teams. San Diego State, for example, who at one point was a 3 seed in the tournament. I don't think they'll be anywhere near that this year. But, you know, I'm not surprised to see this notation where it says underachieved last year. Yes. And I think, I'm trying to remember his name, Steve, what is his name? The guy that coached the Fab Five, right? The same guy, Steve, I'll get it. But basically their coach is just, I don't know, he's a player coach. We've known this, but.
Steve Fisher,
thank you. He's a very odd case. I mean, obviously he's a good coach. He's a good enough coach to get in players, but the actual X's and O's are not very impressive. So it's odd that I'd be focusing on SDSU, but definitely I don't see them being a top-level Mountain West team this year. I don't even know what to make of UNLV. Similar idea. Where do you stand on those two teams?
Well, you hit the nail on the head with SDSU. They underachieved last year, and then they lose their two best players, including Jamal Franklin, who who legitimate, you know, was a legitimate star. You know, they just did not get it done last year. They could not rebound. That's the only reason Syracuse beat them was inside scoring and rebounding on the deck of that ship.
Right.
Well, plus the fact that the wind was blowing about 70 miles an hour and no one could make an outside shot, so the scoring had to come from inside, and Syracuse was much better equipped for that kind of game. So, yeah, they're going to take, a pretty big step back. They still have a couple guys who can score. Tulsa transfer Josh Davis, he can score, but they're going to have the same problems as last year, and even worse, and maybe they won't score as much as last year, so the only way I see them going is down. UNLV, they lost five players, including Anthony Bennett, so, you know, Mike Mosier transferred, but, you know, he was kind of unhappy there anyway. They will have a good front court. Roscoe Smith is transferring in from UConn. Bryce DeJean Jones, Kem Birch. Really solid front court. Good players up there. But their back court's going to be a JUCO transfer and a freshman. So as you alluded to with guard play being so important, you know, if you can't get your front court players the ball, they're not going to be able to do that much for you. In any case, I have UNLV third and SDSU fifth, with the Lobos, even after losing Tony Snell and Steve Alford, as the number two team. I still think even losing that, they're still better off than a lot of these teams.
I see.
With Alex Kirk and Kendall Williams, and a good JUCO transfer, one of the top JUCO guys in the country, Deshaun Delaney. He's a good kind of combo guard out on the wing. But he's got big shoes to fill with Snell. He won't do it completely. There's no way he can match all that production. But, again, I think the Lobos might be better off than some of the other teams. I think Utah State, you know, new team to the league, they've been pretty good. It's a step up in competition. Preston Medlin, he's finally healthy again. He'll be in the backcourt. And Jared Shaw's a double-double kind of guy. Will they be able to handle the step up in competition? I think so. I think they're coming into the Mountain West at a good time. You know, with everyone else being down a little bit, it's a good time for Utah State to be coming in. I believe they came in from the WAC. I'm almost sure of that.
I think you're right about that, but it would be the WAC, but I'm not sure. I don't quote me on that one either. Okay, so Mountain West, and that's your quick synopsis there. Now to the Conference USA, and the basic question here is, what's left?
Let's see. I wrote this down. Out goes UCF, Houston, Memphis, and SMU, and in comes Charlotte, who has been in the league before, so that's not a total, you know, newbie. Florida Atlantic, Florida International, Louisiana Tech, Middle Tennessee State, who's actually a pretty good basketball program, Old Dominion, who has some history behind them but are really bad right now, North Texas, who were okay last year, well, should have been okay last year and spit the bit, and Texas San Antonio. So, you know, it's been a loss.
Yeah, not exactly household names of these teams, Chris.
No, and you know, Southern Miss, I thought they played a really good, and they played such a good game against Memphis in the conference tournament final. And I thought they were 27-10. They were 12-4 in the league. I thought they kind of got boned on Sunday. I really did. I wanted to see them in the league. But you know, they return a lot. Gerald Brooks and Neil Watson, senior backcourt, that's always good. Don't know if, you know, they seem to have returned most of their guys. They were 12-4 last year, and the competition wasn't as good, so it would... you could almost suspect that maybe they'll take a little bit of a step up, at least as far as their record. I mean, it's not going to, you know, you better, if you want to get in from this conference, you better, you know, win the auto bid, because your RPI is not going to, and you're not playing great competition. So, you know, you should just go and win it and get in yourself. Behind them, I have UTEP. They have Julian Washburn. He's a 6'8" forward. Very good in the open floor. They're another team that likes to get up and down. He averaged 12.5 last year. So, you know, that Mackenzie Moore, he's a good scoring guard. I saw him play once already against New Mexico State, who's a very good and very big team. They lost, but, you know, they look pretty good. Cedric Long, 6'10 guy up front. He gets to the glass, but, I mean, what was he doing in there against Sim Bular? But you know, how many teams have Sim Bular?
Right.
Or anybody who's 7'5". So, other than that, I got, you know, Louisiana Tech, Raheem Appleby. He had 15 points a game, but nobody – he had 15 points a game last year. Nobody else averaged more than, I think it was 8.9 from what I looked. But they played good defense in, you know, they in the WAC, and they were – I think they could be okay. And behind that, I mean, it just gets worse and worse as we go down.
You don't have to get into all of these, but
– Yeah, I just wanted to point out, get it to UAB, because I think the best player in the conference is on UAB, Rod Rucker.
Okay.
He plays forward even at 6'5". He's probably going to be a double-double guy. He should be the player of the year. He's just very aggressive and just keeps at you. But, you know, they won their first three games, and one of them was over Rutgers. So, you know, maybe things aren't that bad in Birmingham.
Not bad, not bad. All right, so... so a little bit of juice in Conference USA. But obviously, as we mentioned, not anybody that you'll probably hear from in the Final Four anytime soon. So let's now go to a very big conference.
Hey,
where
Ben,
you... go ahead.
Did we miss the Big 12?
Now, that is our next conference, Big 12. You're on the money tonight. You've been right on top of this one, Mr. Chris in Syracuse.
We keep taking steps down the ladder, and I'm thinking, where's the Big 12?
I know, I agree with you. No, it was interesting to note that the Big 12 last year really did amount to basically Kansas and a lot of misses. Baylor with a huge disappointment in the tournament, to say the least, and also, you know, a few others, and Texas with. How am I not knowing this? It's a Freudian slip. Rick Barnes on the hot seat for good reason. They haven't done anything in the last 3 years, looking terrible. But as far as who's at the top, Kansas looks like the team to beat right now, and they certainly were last year too, even though they lost a bunch of guys in the offseason, like Ben McLemore and some others. But they returned with Andrew Wiggins, clearly the most talked about prospect in college basketball right now, and a renewed Perry Ellis that neither of us could have expected. And a very exciting story there. And then Oklahoma State with Marcus Smart, who elected to stay another year, looking really good so far, including tonight. So your look at the Big 12.
Kansas at the top. I don't think they've put it – they've looked good. They looked okay tonight. Iona hung in for a little while. But, you know, they put it away. A lot of Perry Ellis, a lot of Joel Embiid inside. They just, you know, as a big guy, he's, you know, the benefactor of the Bill Self system of feeding the big guy. And, you know, Wiggins looked okay. I still think we haven't seen his full potential or his full game yet. But, you know, it's only, what, his third, fourth game? They got to get a feel. These kids got to get a feel for it. It's, you know, the competition's better than when they were in high school. Everything, the game moves faster. The other kids are better. They're bigger. They're quicker. So it can take some getting used to. But Perry Ellis, man, when they played When Duke? They beat Duke, he was huge.
I
he even had
that.
The F it 3 going on.
Yeah.
Like, oh, nobody around me? F it 3! and draining it.
You're stroking it. All over the court that night.
I don't know. He grew a pair of balls this offseason or something. Or somebody told him that he sucked because, oh, man, he was a tough watch last year.
Mm-hmm.
One of the guys who could get me screaming at my TV.
Right.
Big guys who don't man up and go inside and just, you know, pussyfoot around the perimeter. They kind of upset me. But, hey, turning on a little bit.
Right.
I think this is going to be a really good two-horse race, though, between them and OK State. Oklahoma State looked fantastic tonight against supposedly a good Memphis team.
Really blew them out.
Smart. I don't know. I didn't see like the last about 6 minutes of the game because I had to come here and
right.
And Marcus Smart already had 35 points. Who knows what he finished with?
I'll check.
At one point in the first half, when he had 25 points, I mean, it was like Memphis 21, Marcus Smart 25.
Dang. It looks like he had 39 points in total. Just to quickly interrupt, he had 39 tonight. 39 in a 40-minute game in college basketball. Pretty impressive.
And he's got a good running mate with Markell Brown.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it was a smart decision for him to stay. It was a smart decision for him to stay and, you know, what he's going to accomplish there. But, I mean, if you could have come out last year instead of this year, as far as the draft goes, I think you probably could have made more money coming out last year.
That's too bad.
But that's another show.
Yeah, but it's
another show.
It is, but at least in terms of his college play, it's going to be a huge benefit to Oklahoma State. So there is that. No, that's a tough break for him. It'll happen. I mean, I've seen it happen with in football too. But nothing that I can really disagree with you there. I mean, you turned me on to Oklahoma State. Then I watched them on TV tonight. I mean, they just looked fantastic. So, I mean, as long as the offense continues to be there for them, it'll be those two at the top. Really nothing else to say. I mean, let's just quickly get to Texas, I guess, just because I want to see if Rick Barnes is going to survive. What's his deal? I mean, what is his problem? Why has he been so bad the last 3 years?
There's something going on with the program. Even when he brings in talent, it doesn't stay like Mick Cabango.
Mm-hmm.
He can't get guys in. You know, some of the guys he's brought in had a tough time getting them eligible and on the floor. A lot of people revolving door with kids coming in and leaving. So he must not be making a good sell right now, or there's something deeper going on in the program that's turning people off. And I think this year they might finally be bad enough where they throw him out on the street.
Oh,
and I know our friend John will have a that'll be a good day for our friend John. He is not a Rick Barnes guy.
I remember this.
When he is on, it is not a Rick Barnes show.
I can't argue with him though. I mean, I don't think there's any coach that does less with the most than Rick Barnes does. No, really. I mean, he's terrible. He had Kevin Durant on his team and a bunch of other really big good basketball players, and they couldn't even make the Final Four. I mean, that's as bad as it gets.
Yeah, I think he'll be packing. We'll see you coaching in the MAC or something next year. Before we leave this conference, mm-hmm. Shout out to Iowa State, who beat Michigan in Iowa State. George's Niang and Melvin Ejim, they're both back. It's going to be a solid team come March. They're playing good. The energy in that building was very good. I thought the fans were overstepping their bounds a little bit. I thought they started the overrated chant a little too early, but they did end up getting the first court storm of the young season.
Beauty. Beauty. Well, congratulations to them for that. I mean, Iowa State, I'm not quite that familiar with them, but beating Michigan is definitely a good get. Even Michigan, as semi-depleted as they are, so very good to denote. All right, great. So Big 12 in the books. Now the final of the big, and I'll put them up here. The final of the big conferences we'll cover on tonight's program. The West Coast Conference, the WDCC, home of Gonzaga and St. Mary's and BYU and a few others. A lot of pesky guys on this team, on this conference, I should say. So let's get into it now. Your outlook on the WCC, Chris?
Don't worry, Gonzaga will not be at one seed again. I say that with all confidence. So you don't have to worry about people. Nobody has to get up in arms screaming that they're not a one seed and they shouldn't be a one seed. I was willing to give them the chance, and they did not. It was misplaced confidence. And not only that, then they lose, you know, Elias Harrison, Kelly Olynyk. So they still have their backcourt. They still have all those guys who can shoot, like Gary Bell and Kevin Pangos,
uh-huh.
Stockton Jr. But, man, they're streaky shooters. They're not really consistent. They can light it up for a half. They can light it up for 10 minutes. They might even be able to light it up for a game, but it's not sustainable for the entire, you know, an entire 30-some-odd game season. They do have some good inside pieces. Sam Dower and Przemek Karnowski, they can score, but they don't rebound as well as Harris and Olynyk. They're just not as – well, Karnowski is kind of big, but he doesn't jump. So while I still think they're the odds-on favorite to win the league, they're still a top 25 team, but more in probably the 17 to 18 range rather than, you know, oh, they're the number three team in the nation like last year. Little overhyped.
Dig it.
Behind that, I mean, BYU can compete. There's no more Brandon Davies, but Tyler Haws against Stanford looked like a beast. Then again, I could have probably scored 12 points against Stanford. I mean, he scored 30-some-odd, but I think I could have put up a dozen against that team. They don't turn the ball over. They play fast, but they don't turn the ball over. It's going to be a fun – I think it's a fun team to watch. Matt Carlino, their new point guard, I think he's going to be very good distributing the ball and taking care of it. So they're going to play – Gonzaga might have the flash. I think BYU has the more solid and steady team. Behind that, St. Mary's, they're probably not going to mount this – without Matthew Dellavedova, mm-hmm. one of the best talents that league's ever seen. Without him, I don't – they're not going to be able to mount a serious challenge like they have the last couple years. Brad Waldo's still there inside, and they have to get him the ball. He can score. They have to get him the ball. Tough guy, too. Remember him getting his tooth knocked out in the conference tournament last year? You remember that one? He got his tooth knocked out. Then he picked it. Well, it was halfway out. Then he pulled it out, and then he ran over and, like, dropped it in the head coach's hand, and the head coach, like, freaked out. He's like, I don't want this. Like, dropped it on the floor.
Yay.
Make some graduate assistant pick it up.
Woo, yay, yay.
Well, that's why you have graduate assistants.
No, that's a very good point, very good point. Good call on their part, right?
Past that, I mean, there's a lot of teams in this conference that have they have a lot of experience, just maybe not, you know, it's not the highest talent level. But, I mean, when I talk about experienced teams, Santa Clara, San Diego, San Francisco, Pacific, new to the league, even though they feel like they're a West Coast Conference team. They were actually a Big West team. They're in. These teams are all very solid. They'll put on good games. But, you know, they're mid-major schools, and that's just what it's going to be. Loyola Marymount is going to be a terrible team, but Anthony Ireland is a big-time player. Just they have utterly failed him in doing anything and getting any kind of players around him. They'll probably finish second to last, and that's just because Pepperdine still plays basketball.
Wow. Yeah. And Pepperdine being dead last, basically? Okay. So that's there's your WCC.
Have you seen where they're located in their campus? I do not feel bad for them.
Oh, no, no. I'm very familiar with Pepperdine. It is a beautiful campus with beautiful people, and I know it well. I dig. Yep. Yeah, the team of the Waves certainly will enjoy those, if not the basketball, this year. Okay. That's well done, Mr. Chris. Let's now go into our little conferences. And so we do not want to spend too much time on any of these, because these are conferences that, you know, fill up the bottom of every bracket in the NCAA tournament. So what I would like to do, we'll go through each of these one by one. And you've compiled some very good notes that you've sent to me. Just give me the team that you like best out of each of these conferences, and then we'll go down the line in the remaining 24 minutes. So we'll start with the Missouri Valley Conference, which I think this is the former Creighton Conference, right? So who would be the favorite?
Yes, it is.
Oh, nice. Wow.
Wichita State. By far.
Mm-hmm.
Even though they lost a couple keys, they still have the conference's best player in Klee Anthony Early. He can shoot the three. He can do everything. And Ron Barker, who wasn't there all year for them last year until the end because he was hurt. He's back and he's healthy, so Wichita State, I think, even above, I don't care how much Indiana State and Bradley have improved, they're just not going to touch Wichita State. Indiana State, you know, shout out for them for their big win at Notre Dame this past Sunday. It was a good thing for them, but you know, they're a number two team in this league.
All right, so we'll see how many of these we can do before the end of the show. Up next, the Ivy League.
Harvard, this year's Harvard squad is probably going to be the most touted Ivy League squad with the most expectations that there's ever been. I mean, they put down New Mexico in the painful reminders of last year's tournament, putting down New Mexico. Yeah. I like Tommy Amaker as a coach. I think he's done a really good job. Siani Chambers, league's best point guard's back. Laurent Rivardi's back. He can shoot it. And the two kids that, I don't know if it was academic or some kind of code violation with the school, but Kyle Casey and Brandon Curry weren't with the team last year, didn't play, and they were big pieces, and they even without these two really bona fide stars, they still managed to upset a number three or four seed in the tournament. And now those kids are back, so you know this is the real deal for Harvard. I don't think they should have any problems coming out of there. Plus, the advantage of them getting to the tournament is there's no conference tournament in the Ivy League. It's just a regular season champion who gets the bid.
Wow. That is really easy, especially for a small conference. And I only mean small in terms of where it is relative to the rest of the Division I programs. Obviously, Ivy League schools are big schools, but more for education than for actual athletics. Okay, next conference is Sun Belt. You know, this will be interesting. What do you see out of the Sun Belt?
There's some talent there.
Mm-hmm.
Georgia State's pretty good. South Alabama's pretty good. Louisiana Lafayette's pretty good.
Okay.
Alfred Payton's probably the best, might be the best player in the league. But I'm still with a balanced attack and three guys who averaged more than 13 points last year. Georgia State, even though they got thumped by Bama tonight, can't really get on them. Power Conference versus, you know, the Sun Belt.
Okay.
Also a team that's seeing a lot of turnover. So they'll be on steady ground, but I still like Georgia State.
All right, very well. Now to the Colonial Conference. Who's your favorite?
Here's another league that's been just ravaged by realignment. Georgia State was in there last year. Dominion, some of these, they've had several schools who've just up and created football programs out of thin air and, you know, gone to the Sun Belt to play Division I football. Drexel was the pick for last year. They did not live up to it. Damian Lee, their ball handler, Damian Lee wasn't healthy. France Massenet was the player of the year. He's a great ball handler. Chris Fouch, good inside. You know, the guards will get the defense, should draw the defense out. I even saw him in the Rutgers game tonight, Fouch, just cleaning up inside because they had to leave him to help. And that's it. Towson's in this league. They have an NBA prospect in Jarrell Bennamon. He started at Georgetown, never got a look. He's a 6'8", 245 guy. He averaged 17 and 11 last year. He's the real deal. I like them. I actually did like them to win the league, but, man, that Nova game just totally turned me off to them. Just small in a big spot.
I see. All right, on to the MAC. And in college football, we see a lot of action between Akron and Toledo. Will we see the same for them in basketball?
We'll see them 1-2, I think. With Akron being on top. Lost a couple guys. Nick Harney, still a quality front court player. Demetrius Treadwell, Quincy Diggs. The point guard situation's a little up in the air there. They get that figured out, they should win the league easy. Ryan Pearson for Toledo, 18 points, 7 boards a game last year. And Julius Brown, another guard, 13.6 assists. They'll be good. They should be good. The best play, the third team is Buffalo, and I'll end it here, but they do have the best player in the league forward, Javon McRae. 18-8 and 2.5 blocks last year. He was the player of the year last year, I believe, and he should be player of the year again this year. He's one of the most talented forwards in the country. If he had a little bit of range, you'd hear about him.
All right. So you're a MAC summary from Kristen Syracuse. Now to the Big West, which has really been dominated. Certainly represented by Long Beach State. Pretty talented team. And they've been the face of the conference for the last couple of seasons. How do you see it this year? Will Long Beach State repeat?
I think so. Notwithstanding, I watched them get whacked by a very down Kansas State team, which I don't think Bruce Weber's in trouble yet, but he could be if he continues on this path. But the 49ers, they did lose 4 of their top 6. But Mike Caffey's the best point guard in the league by far. They're transferring 5 JUCO guys, and normally the JUCO guys come in and they're pretty well prepared. And a UCLA transfer, Tyler Lamb. He won't be on the floor till December though, but it shouldn't be a big problem. After that, I like the Anteaters, and that they had the tallest kid in college basketball, Mamadou Ndiaye. He's going to be the tallest player in the land. And after that, Davis. I got your guys. I got your Gauchos down at number 5, by the way.
Hey, all right. Less, greater than 8th.
With Allen, with Allen Williams, 17 and 11 last year. That's pretty good.
That is pretty good.
Yeah.
I like it.
That's all
it.
I got
I like
for
it.
That.
Very nice.
I wasn't going to leave the Gauchos out.
I love that. Thank you very much for their inclusion. I'll be checking them out, hopefully, here in Westwood against UCLA coming up in December. I look forward to that game so long as I can get a ticket. All right, next up, the other MAC conference.
Are tickets that in demand out there?
Not really. Maybe a little bit more than perhaps Oakland, but not by much. Not exactly busting down the door to get tickets to that one. Anyway, the other MAC conference, MAAC, featuring Manhattan and others. Who's going to come out of that conference in the MAC?
I think the MAC. Manhattan, I think. George Beeman.
Okay.
They were supposed to be good last year, and when he hurt his ankle, things just fell apart. But they got him back. He's solid inside. They have 2-time Defensive Player of the Year, Ramel Brown, in the front court, and a Maryland transfer who's wasn't eligible last year, but is eligible this year. So they should be able to take it. I almost think kind of easy. You know, got teams like Canisius on the rise. Billy Barron, the point guard, scored 17 a game last year, and they're transferring a guy from Stetson who's going to play Chris Perez, one of those fifth year guys who last year eligibility could transfer to a school with the master's program deal. I would be remiss, I can't leave the MAC without mentioning the Iona Gales.
The point shaving wonders.
John Armand is back.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Point shaver Momo Jones is now no longer with the team. He has moved on.
Oh, that's
so maybe now we won't be watching what the line is and how many points anybody is giving away. But they have a guard as Sean Armand. He was one of 10 players last year to hit 100 plus three-pointers. And I believe he's only 101 three-pointers made away from J.J. Redick's college record, and he shouldn't have any problem getting that.
Wow. Pretty crazy. Pretty crazy. All right, so now on to the Summit League, and I have no comment on it, so you have the floor.
Well, I got Denver up top, even though they lost badly to UCLA, and I thought they should play it closer.
Mm-hmm.
They bolted the WAC, which was a good thing. This would be more of a slam dunk team to come out of here. But Royce O'Neal transferred to Baylor. They do have Chris Udofia, you know, 13, 4.5, and 3.5 last year. And if he gets first team honors in the Summit League again this year, well, it'll be, you know, they spent 1 year in the WAC. I forgot where they were the 1 year before that. But if he gets, you know, first team all-conference, it'll be his third all-conference team in three different leagues, which probably hasn't been done before. They play very slow basketball. I think it was the second slowest in the nation last year as far as, you know, the amount of possessions. And right behind them, and almost as slow as North Dakota State, returned 9 of 10 players. But I still think Denver has that league
okay.
pretty well wrapped up.
Very nice. So now to the Patriots. Very, very well done. The Patriot League is next in our college preview. And once again, I have absolutely no idea who is who in here. It says in my notes that Boston U joins the league with the most complete team. So let's see. You think they'll have enough to win the Patriot League?
Yes, even without a true five-man, they do have a 6'7", 240 guy inside. 11.5, 6.5 last year. You know, well, like we've said, that's about the only thing they're really lacking. After that, I'd say Army. They can shoot the three ball. They have a couple guys over 40% from three last year, including Kyle Wilson. Even without Ella Ellis, they'll be good. They have no front court. I mean, like none. They were one of the worst rebounding teams in the country last year. And same thing with Lafayette, who was even worse on the boards. You know, Tony Johnson was the league's most efficient scorer, and now the guys replacing him shot a combined 26%. Lehigh was good last year. They lost 60 points a game from their starting lineup with C.J. McCollum moving on and others. Bucknell's usually a perennial favorite in this league, but going to regress a lot. Mike Muscala is gone. He was a big piece of what they were doing. In fact, the main piece of what they were doing down there. So without him, they're going to regress a lot. And I think for one of the first times in recent memories, they won't be competing at the top of the league.
Oh, wow. How about that? Okay, so now, if with all apologies and due respect to the Northeast, I think I'm just going to hand wave them. But I will give a nod to Robert Morris for upsetting Kentucky last year. That's about all I have, because I want to get to the Atlantic Sun. I want to really get into what we have for the old Dunk City without Andy Enfield. Obviously, some of the players are still there. So, do you think they'll have enough to win the conference?
I do. In fact, most everybody's still there except Andy and except Coach Andy.
Mm-hmm.
They did lose Sherwood Brown, who was kind of the face of that whole run, which hurts. But they still return a lot of players. Brett Comer, like a 45 assist ratio, assist percentage. It was second in the NCAA. But he also turned it over on 30% of his possessions, so that's got to calm down. I'm guessing a lot of that was the high rising and the alley oops and whatever, because you're going to throw some of them away.
Right.
Chase Feeler, he's a good gunner, good shooter. They have plenty to win this league, even with Mercer returning nine of its rotation players. Their main shooter and scorer, Travis Smith, is one of the two guys that left who ended up being gone. But they're a big, experienced team, especially up front. They were the best defensive team in the league last year. But it's still not enough to get by Dunk City. They're not as explosive. Florida Gulf Coast scores more. And Florida Gulf Coast, you know, they weren't the best defensive team in the league. They were the second best defensive team in the league. So I think, you know, it all evens out. I think they're going to make the second weekend of the tournament again? No, never going to happen
right,
again.
Right, right.
but they were fun to watch. It was a good story.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, again, bracket busting all over the place. Not that a small part of me wasn't happy to watch Georgetown lose, but
small. Right.
But at some point during the tournament, I'm rooting for money.
I gotcha. Well, it happens. You know, that's tough. I mean, in today's college basketball, it really is impossible to predict where those are going to happen. You can't really do it. You really can't. It's tough. But no, good points all the way around with FGCU. And they have good uniforms too, I should mention. Anyway, random, but
oh yeah,
I like their uniforms.
They're styling.
Oh, absolutely. I'm a fan. They don't try to do too much with them. I think that's key. You know, in a league where in an era where everybody's trying to try some wacky designs, I think they did it just right with FGCU. All right, so let's get to the. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to throw out a few more here.
Okay.
The WAC is much reduced. It's the land of misfit toys. They're bringing in Chicago State and Missouri, Kansas City.
Didn't even know they
which,
had
you know,
these.
Really fit in with the really fit in with the Western profile of the Western Athletic Conference.
Yep.
But I got to mention New Mexico State. What a fucking huge team. Sim Buller, 7'5", 360.
Wow.
He looks in better shape this year too, but staying on the floor is a problem for that man, or at least a bit of a struggle. You know, for anybody that size, it's gonna be. He could probably also do better than 46% from the free throw stripe. Then they have this Newfound guy. He's in the front court. He's 6'10", 270, which, I mean, is tiny compared to Buller. I mean, he must just get thrown around in practice. And I haven't seen him play yet, so I don't know what the deal is. But Sim Buller's quote-unquote little brother is a freshman, Tanvir. He's on the team, 7'3", 335.
Man, huge.
They have bodies.
Wow. Forrest.
And the best guard in the league who could win player of the year.
Who knew?
He led them in point steals and assists last year. So,
wow.
I mean, I watched them. They beat UTEP. Didn't blow them out, but a convincing win. It's kind of sad that they're stuck in such a shitty conference. I'd like to see what they can do. But
hey,
I mean,
listen.
But when you bring in those kind of size guys, sometimes it's kind of like you're just taller than everybody else
right.
in this league, so mm-hmm. you should have your way. But still, it's kind of an oddity to have guys that big.
Even in basketball, right? Yeah. I just want to get a quick note from our friend John in Connecticut. He asks, he says, do not forget about Grand Canyon University, either in the WAC conference or somewhere in there. So
I think they are joining the WAC.
Yeah.
I don't think they'll make the postseason. They're not eligible yet, John. first year in the league.
I think that's
that for-profit school that joined up.
Wow.
Came up from Division II.
Yeah, who knew?
Yeah. They did a story on them.
Really?
On Sports Center or something.
Ooh, boy.
Yeah. But before we get too far away, I think High Point in the Big South could be a small team to watch. I think they're pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Alan Chaney, he's finally going to end up his strange voyage of college basketball from Florida to Virginia Tech to High Point University. So I guess things really didn't work out at his first couple steps. Might be the league's best player, probably the one with the most talent. They could be High Point and a team in a league that's usually, you know, either Liberty or maybe Charleston Southern or Radford or Winthrop. I think High Point's got it this year. Also in the Southern Conference, the SoCon, the South Conference, Southern Conference, Elon. They're going to be a pretty good team as far as that kind of level of college basketball goes. SoCon was hit pretty hard by realignment. Charleston and Davidson. I mean, Charleston's already left for the Colonial,
mm-hmm.
And they've usually been a stalwart of, you know, your 14, 15, and 16 seeds. They've been in there quite a few times. And both Elon and Davidson leave next year, the conference. Davidson goes to the A-10. And Appalachia State and Georgia Southern already went to the Sun Belt because they need to play Division I football for some reason.
Huh, who knew?
You know, football, that's the decision maker.
I dig. It has been. Yeah. And on that interesting note, we will wrap it up with a college basketball preview. We've really pretty much covered everything from the top to the bottom. And when we say the bottom, we mean the bottom. It's been really comprehensive. And, Chris, I couldn't have done it without you. And that goes to the notes as well. Really, thank you for all your support and for your contributions tonight. We'll have a good head as to what's going to come in college basketball season, so enjoy the games. I mean, I'm sure you're looking forward to it already. In fact, engaged you are, as you've been relaying some of the deets from the season so far. Undoubtedly, are you excited about this year, this season?
Oh, I'm always 90
seconds.
Yep.
Yeah. I'll watch small schools play basketball any day too. So
Beauty.
You know, it's some of the big versus small school matchups. They're
mm-hmm.
a little tough to watch sometimes.
Right, I understand.
So,
yeah,
but you know, it's a good time all the way around. I think
I dig. It should be a good year. I look forward to it as well. So thanks again for your time.
60 seconds.
Enjoy the season. And we'll do it again in a few months with our mid-season report. Thanks very much, Chris.
Yep, no problem. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely, no problem. All right, take care, buddy. That's that for Chris in Syracuse, and that's our program tonight. Thank you very much for listening, everyone. We'll be back tomorrow with our regular show. Thanks again to Chris in Syracuse. More to come tomorrow night when we cover the rest of sports. But until then, we'll see you next time.